This is Richard Epcar, voice of Bot-Toe and Ghost in the Shell, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got a special episode of Nutty Bites for you. Today, we're going to be talking about fan entitlement, and it's a lot of fun. I think you're really going to enjoy it. But before I do that, I would like to take the time to thank all of the patrons that are helping me bring you each episode of Nutty Bites for this year. So thank you so much. And well, this month actually, but this year is the beginning of that. So I just want to thank you so much to all of the people. I want to thank Beth. I want to thank Aaron. I want to thank David. I want to thank Aurora Lee, Susan, Melissa, Susanna, Frank, Kinsey, Ian, Harold, Jen, Patrick, Shane, Ken, and Lynette. Thank you so much for helping me make this a better show and helping me have the inspiration to bring everything out there and helping me with the server fees. And yeah, tell your friends. And if we get $10 more a month, you will get two episodes a year. Two episodes a month. So we just need $10 more or 10 subscribers at $1 each, or one person at $10, however you want to break it down. We just need $10 more and you will be getting two episodes of Nutty Bites a month. And that would not be, you know, like a full episode and then kind of like a half done episode or just me rambling into the microphone or a bonus of just bloopers. No, it would be two real full episodes every single month. So if you can figure out how you can get people interested in that, that would be great. If you are listening to this and thinking, hey, I'd like two shows, but I don't have $10. Well, just throw a buck and, you know, see what happens. Otherwise, that's fine. I'm fine with doing one episode a month. And I hope you really enjoy this episode for this month. I'm pretty sure you will. Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got an episode for you of Nutty Bites. We are going to be talking about fan entitlement. What is fan entitlement? That is when the fans think that they deserve something from either their creators, the actors, or other people that are involved in fandom, or sometimes even other fans. With me today, I have Jason Banks from the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast.
Yo, what's up?
And I have Jared Axelrod from the voice of the Free Planet X.
Hello.
And today with me, as always, I have my regular co-host.
Hi, I'm Tech.
And thank you very much for joining us today, Jared. Jared, this, I think, is your first time on Nutty Bites.
It is. I mean, we've known each other forever, but you've never invited me on this show.
I've never invited you. Oh, dang. Now it's in my court. Sorry. Well, this time I realized that this particular topic was perfect, considering, and we're going to start off with this, some experiences that you had at Balticon while dressed as Captain America.
That is correct.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, for historical context, this was, I think, the weekend after the comic came out that Captain America was revealed to be a sleeper Hydra agent. I think it was either the weekend or the week after. Anyway, it had been long enough that the news flurry had happened and everyone was all... It's weird that it got so much press. But I guess Civil War had just happened, so everybody was into the movie, and to have people talking about Captain America comics was something that obviously Disney and Marvel wanted. So this very strange storyline started week before Balticon, and it was very strange in and of itself. But the consequence of that is I had made a Captain America costume because the theme of the new media party was the Golden Age. So obviously. And I was wearing that. And several people on the street, at the convention, and even at the party, kept calling me a Nazi.
Ouch!
Even though I was dressed as the literal opposite of a Nazi, I would like to point out.
Yes.
And being a gentleman of Jewish heritage, that was a weird thing to experience. over and over again, to be dressed as Captain America.
And you were golden age Captain America.
Yeah, I mean, not that I expect anyone to know the difference.
But even at that, it's that you are, you know, a person in a costume at a convention, yeah, getting flack for the decision that a writer made in the latest issue of the comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, you... I'm pretty sure Golden Age Captain America punched Hitler. I'm pretty sure he did that.
There's a lot of textual evidence to support that claim, yes.
Yes. And, well, the thing is, okay, so there's a bunch of things here. Number one, when you are cosplaying, you are not the character, and you are not responsible for the character's decisions. Number two, there are real people involved in this. You know, when you are a cosplayer, you are a real person. Number three, that issue had just come out. So anybody thinking that you were trying to dress as Nazi Captain America, no, I don't think that they had any valid argument. And I will be happy to say I did not hear of anybody calling Grail Pup a Nazi at that same party, thankfully.
Well, they were nice to the child. That's important.
You know, that whole situation still boggles my mind. Like, is that, come on, guys, it's a comic. They retcon origins and they do crazy twists. I'm just saying, they retcon things. They change origins all the time. And, I mean, come on, they made Nick Fury black just because Sam Jackson played him in a movie.
Well, that's a really good reason, for personally.
No.
Really, I mean, how awesome was Sam Jackson as Nick Fury? I mean, sometimes it's really good when the media adaptation influences the comic. Like, hello, Harley Quinn. It's an obvious example right there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, fans coming out and reacting to a cosplayer like that is – it's a little unnerving, especially as a geek, especially as a cosplayer. I have heard other stories of cosplayers who, you know, they're playing somebody who is a bit promiscuous, and then people think that they can just come up and do things with that cosplayer, not because of a revealing outfit, which is not a good reason, but because the character. No. Yeah,
the idea that the character you're portraying has a certain set of personality traits, so there go the cosplayer or the actor portraying that character is the same person. An awesome older example of this is, I forget the name of the character, but the little girl, the blonde nemesis on Little House in the Prairie.
Yes.
Who played the evil, like she was the villain in the stories with the little girls. Even, you know, all the way through her adulthood, every time they went to conventions or they went to meetings or whatever, she was slapped across the face. She was yelled at for being mean. And I was an actress playing a part on a TV show, but everyone is convinced that she is this mean, horrible person. And she's not.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy that played Biff Tannen. Mm-hmm. In the Back to the Future movies is he's a devout Christian. He's a country music recording artist with quite a few albums, and some of them are not bad. And he happens to be the nicest guy on earth who gets punched in the face by random strangers because he played Biff Tannen in three movies.
And the guy that played Kevin Arnold's brother in The Wonder Years is constantly getting, "You're such a jerk." Okay. And what are people's reactions to the young man that plays Joffrey on Game of Thrones?
No, same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to go back to entitlement, it does the same thing with, you know, oh, this character is a sexy seductress in this TV show and she doesn't wear a lot of clothing, so therefore the cosplayer must also be a seductress and also be just as promiscuous, and I can put my hands all over. No, you cannot.
No, you cannot.
That is a different person. That is a cosplayer at a convention, and keep your filthy paws off her.
And even if it were the character, you cannot put your hands on her without her letting you. Consent is very important.
It's like all of this is coming from anime cons. It's so bad. Like, it feels so bad because I've had this talk with several people because I'm an older anime fan. And so it's very hard for me to still, even in 2016, when anime is so prevalent, so hard for me to be like, yeah, I'm a fan of that. Because not only is there bizarre subject matter in anime itself, but the fan base, oh man, the fan base, like, it swings so far in both directions. Like, a con I previously went to just recently, AFO, I hang out with literally a gang of girls that I met the very first time, and I'm like this nervous, I'm in Florida by myself, like I've never been here, and I get brought into this group by like 8 or 9 female cosplayers, and they're awesome. But like, having sat back and watched how people react to them or think they can react to them, it's absolutely disturbing. Like, insanely disturbing. And it's just because they decided to do, which is a really adorable cosplay set. It was the Eevee Evolutions, but as Sailor Scouts.
Oh, cool.
Absolutely adorable. And it boggles my mind at how the actual reality of the situation is not reality. Like, it's so bad. I mean, like, I understand, like, there were guys that were doing press like I was that were like, oh, hey, you know, can I take pictures, blah, blah, blah. But then there were just others that were just out of this world. And I'm just like, come on, guys.
Well, I think as a cosplayer, my favorite, and I'm doing that in, like, sarcastic air quotes, my favorite is the hand hover when they want to take a picture with you, but they're so scared to touch you. So they just kind of hover, which is better than somebody trying to grope me, because then their wrist really, really hurts because
or draping over you like they're a mink coat.
Yeah, yeah. it's kind of funny. Well, but the hand hover was like the first time it happened. I'm like, what is he doing?
Well, and this is one of these things, ladies and gentlemen, that you know you're looking at two opposite ends of the spectrum. On one side, you have people that are so afraid of people that they have to hover hand because they don't know what the rules are for touching. And then you have other people that just go out and grope people because they don't know the rules for touching.
Exactly.
So here's a really simple point there, wireless listeners. Ask someone. Mm-hmm.
Can I put my arm around you? Sure.
Seems pretty simple to me. I mean,
can we do a fun pose together?
I'm just a dumb army guy. And, you know, it seems pretty simple. Ask people. I met a group of cosplayers at Anna Maritimes in Fredericton, New Brunswick. They were dressed as the entire extended cast of Sailor Moon. So they had all the Sailor Scouts. They had a little girl as Chibi Moon. They had some guy as Tuxedo Mask. And their theme was the wedding. So they had, you know, Sailor Moon in the white wedding dress, and they went to the provincial legislature, which is a beautiful old building with a big staircase, stone staircase out front, and they posed for the wedding photos. Afterwards, I ran into two of the scouts, and I wanted a fun photo, so I went up to Sailor Venus and Sailor Jupiter always being a favorite of mine growing up, and I said, I'm wondering if I could get, and I'm wearing the Clockwork Doctor costume with the big mask, I was like, I'm wondering if I could get Sailor Jupiter to kiss me on the beak while Venus looks all huffy and jealous. And they said, sure, that sounds fun. I handed someone my camera, we snapped the photo, it was great. Venus is all pouty and Jupiter's leaning in to give me a little kiss on the beak, and it was hilarious.
And the following year, you did it
The following year, I did the same picture again with Rainbow Dash and Pinkie Pie, where Pinkie Pie is all huffy and jealous while this girl with like a rainbow wig gave me a kiss on the beak. And it makes for a great photo, but I asked first.
Yeah, and you didn't creep anybody out.
No, and I didn't expect anything from them because, hey, guess what? There are people just like me.
Yep. So,
it's kind of a weird, like the dark side of the coin of the fan passion that is so great about geeky pursuits is that everyone has this wonderful, intense passion toward their favorite thing. And it means more to them than just a series of books or comic book character or a movie or a television show. It's more than that. And that's what drives them to do, in some cases, great things. But the converse of that is because it means more than just a work of culture, a piece of culture, because it means more than that, it is harder for people then to separate their feelings about the fiction with the actual flesh and blood representation in front of them.
Absolutely. And I also think added on to that would be the fact that they put so much time and effort and money into these things that they're so passionate about, that it, to them, they feel like they have a right to have some sort of voice or influence over it in any form that it takes, mm-hmm. whether it's a cosplayer or a comic or a reboot or a television series. You know, they feel like that gives them some sort of gravitas in the making or the continuation of that thing.
Right. And this actually leads me, because this kind of goes with dealing with cosplayers, dealing with celebrities like in person, either on the street or at a con or whatever. And I got this from Tabs, having had worked at conventions and having worked with various celebrities, people getting really mad with guests of a con if they won't sign your thing or take photos in between their autograph and photo sessions, which is really irksome if you understand how cons work, because generally that's how a con makes the money that they've already paid to the celebrity to be at the con. They've paid for the celebrity's hotel, their flight, and sometimes an appearance fee. And so if there's an autograph and a photo session that you pay money for, that's how they're paying for that. So you stopping them on the way to a panel or when they're going out to lunch is pretty rude. And then the other thing that I've seen a lot of, and this happens in certain fandoms where a show has been going on for, 13 years now and is not going to die on the CW, where they feel entitled to hug and touch certain actors to the point that the actors have gotten uncomfortable and have to have somebody there telling you you cannot hug the actor during your photo session.
Does this show happen to involve two brothers?
It might, yeah, and
a really cool car.
Yes, and the actor involved may have been on Firefly as well.
Oh, one of them was. Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. Mind you, he looks completely different though.
Oh, he looks great.
I know,
but yeah,
he looks much better now, actually.
And you know, another thing, just you were talking about, and you know, Jared, you mentioned, you know, a geek is somebody who's unashamed about their passion, and you know we invest a lot of ourselves in our passions, especially a lot of time. And what it seems to be is that these people, that these fans, and we're all guilty of it, we all invest a lot of time into reading a series of books, watching a certain TV show, you know, playing a certain series of games, reading some comics. And then when you meet the personal manifestation of that, be it an actor, a cosplayer, a writer, it's, I've invested so much of myself in this, I want my 30 seconds. Well, you know, millions of people around the world want their 30 seconds with that creator. You know, I think one of the person who's had to deal with the worst of all of this is George Martin, especially since the TV show's come out. And, well, Nutty, you had a chance to meet George Martin at a signing, and by then he was just so drained, he didn't even look up. He signed the book and walked away. And the whole point of us meeting George Martin was to tell him the story of how we met, and we met through the book, and how the copy of the book that we had was so significantly important to our relationship. And it was, hi, who are you? Awesome, bye.
Yeah, and I wasn't expecting to even see him at all, actually, at that con. Unfortunately, the one night that you could have spoken to George, I was passed out because we had just driven, 16 hours or something crazy, yeah, because we stopped at Gettysburg on the way down to Balticon, and we were exhausted, and I just passed out, and I slept through the Thursday night. But
that being said,
he was so booked. It was, I did not plan on seeing him, and I only went to get somebody else's book signed.
So yeah,
him.
It's disappointing that I didn't get a chance to share this personal moment with George. But I'm pretty sure that everybody on Earth who watches his TV show and reads his books has a personal moment they wish to share with George. And I am no different than any of these other, you know, specs.
Exactly.
And I didn't get a chance to share that story. That's fine. I'm okay. But I think George gets way too much hate. And I've heard some really hateful things. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, artists have had to write songs like George Martin is not your bee.
Thank you.
And write George, write like the wind. And I think the most hurtful thing I've ever read, it was on the official forums for his book series, was people saying, I really want to read these books, and I really want to get involved in this because all my friends love it, but I don't want to get involved in a book series to have the writer die, and he's old and fat, so I'm not going to read any of the books until they're done, just to make sure that I don't get stuck like what happened with Robert Jordan. And the how are you going to take that as a content producer if someone is saying, I don't want to get involved in your materials because I don't like your physical presence and I feel that you may die before you're done, so your works are meaningless to me until they're done? How hurtful is that?
Rage, by the way. I am experiencing
rage. I'm sure he cries all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think there's a certain level of success where I don't think he cares about what people say. I think, and this is something that I was fascinated to find out recently about the origin of Game of Thrones, that he started it because he was so frustrated working in television.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And having other people's opinions about his work and having to make changes. So I think, and not just financial success, but I think personal creative success, I think he's fine with it. I think he's making the books that he wants to make, and that's the end goal, not having the audience be excited about his works, though I'm sure he enjoys that, not the money that's coming in because of the being bestsellers and also the television show, though I'm sure he enjoys that too. I think the main point of everything he's doing with the Game of Thrones and why it's taking him so long to do that is because he wants it to be right for him.
He
doesn't care.
He
literally doesn't care. And I think that's a strange thing now in the terms of the internet. It's not a strange thing because, you know, writers just do that all the time. But I think now that we have this kind of unprecedented way to talk to people on the internet and get directly into creators' faces, and I think that he is kind of doesn't care. He's just doing it. He's gonna finish them when he does finish them, and they're going to be the exact books that he wants to put out there, and he doesn't care.
And I think it's awesome, but as a fan, I think what annoys me is that my other fans don't respect that. And, you know, George will, on his blog, or is not a blog, he'll write about another great passion of his, which is football. And he'll write about how his football team is doing and how, you know, the current season's going and draft choices, etc. And then the first comment will be, hi, I don't watch football, but can you stop watching and write your book, please? Because I want to read it.
Yeah, it got so bad to the point that he put a blanket statement. If you comment about A Song of Ice and Fire on a non-Song of Ice and Fire post, my assistant Ty will just delete it. But it's... It's very rage filling for me as a fan because I get very upset about this. And at one of our first panels for Beyond the Wall, somebody brought up the whole, well, what if he dies thing? And I basically got mad and shut them down and said, wait, we will not be entertaining questions like that ever because that is disrespectful and rude. And how would you like it if somebody said that to you about your job? Well, I'm not sure I want to hire you because you might die. I mean, really, this is horrible. And not to mention the fact that he's healthy. There's nothing wrong with him. And it's not his job to be healthy for you, you know, what Jared was talking about, like, this is his passion. He is doing this. This is his opus. This is, for Stephen King fans to understand, this is his Dark Tower series, you know? This is what he is putting the best of everything into. And I love that. And if you are interested about more of this, because I could talk forever, go listen to his podcast. He put it out in, like, 2006. It's really awesome. There's about 13 episodes. Give it a listen.
You just gave me a great idea.
Yes.
When people ask me, oh, my God, how come you haven't read any Stephen King? I can just use that same excuse. Yeah, I'm just so afraid that he'll die before he finishes his 39 million books that I don't want to get stuck, like, halfway through The Stand 9 or The Dark Tower 38.
They're all connected.
They're all connected. They're all one big story.
Exactly. So I don't want to start anything written by this guy or that Richard Bachman fellow, which I hear they may be the same, maybe not. Anyway, I don't want to start any of this stuff and then have him die halfway through. So I'm going to wait until he croaks and then I'll start with, like, Christine and Pet Cemetery and I'll read his old stuff.
You know, they give him crap for being Richard Bachman. But J.K. Rowling did the same thing.
Where do you think she got the idea?
Her crap for that.
Yeah.
Hey, I just have two words to say to all that. Chris Gaines.
I knew you were going to say that.
Okay, Garth Brooks tried the pop thing as Chris Gaines, and that did not work at all. That was horrid.
He also has a rock band. But anyway, you know, I think what Jared said is actually really on point, is that once a person reaches a certain level of stardom, of fame, of once they cross a certain threshold, they're basically given carte blanche to do whatever they want. But I also think that's kind of the goal, because they want to make the things they want to make. They want to make them how they want to make them, and they don't want to make them on someone else's dime or clock. They don't want to. Like, I'm pretty sure his editor or his agent's like, "Hey man, when's that next book coming out?" But they're like really quiet about it. They're kind of timid, like, because they know it'll get done when it gets done. And so far, as they've gotten done, people have loved them.
Mm-hmm. And apparently, Jim Butcher is dealing with the same thing with the Dresden Files. I've not read like Jim Butcher's blog or his Twitter or anything like that, so I don't feel like I understand his personality as well as George R. R. Martin. But it got to the point that he had to quit Twitter and he had to stop interacting with fans online, because they've gotten so upset about the latest book not coming out. And it's like, guys, these are your writers. Be nice to them or they won't write.
Even among...
Yeah, whose fault this is? Mm. This is all J.K. Rowling's fault.
That's true, because she's so... Did like
7 books, one every year, and now everyone thinks that that's what you do.
Yep.
I mean, not entirely J.K. Rowling's fault, but it's this idea of like content on demand, that it should come out every year, just like a television show.
Yep.
When that's not how anything works.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's all because of society. It's like, I hate saying it, but it's all because of society and how things have developed. Like, back, you know, when I was growing up.
Oh, no, is this another Angry Man Shouts a Crowd monologue?
No.
No, those are mine. I do those.
But basically, like, when I was growing up, world news didn't come in.
By the way, when Jason was growing up, we were all adults.
You know, it didn't come in immediately. Like, world news and events didn't come in immediately. You might have got them, you know, within, you know, a few hours of them happening. But now, if something happens in Japan, I get it. The moment it happens.
And we get a live video stream.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think that culture, that aspect of our culture has developed into this thing that is spread amongst people with their fandoms.
Well, I want to add on that. It's instant news. It's free shipping for 2 days with Amazon Prime. It's I can get
24-hour news.
Yeah, 24-hour news. It's I can order a book and it's right there on my phone already. It's I buy a T-shirt and it's here in a couple of days and I don't have to wait for the full run to be done because it's print on demand. You know, everything is on demand right now. We got to have it. And what do you mean it's going to take a week to ship to me?
So there's another example of all of this that I want to talk about. And it's fan entitlement when money's involved.
Ooh.
So a big revolution of the last few years has been things like Kickstarter,
mm-hmm.
where you can donate to a company.
And yes, that's a donation. You're not buying.
Right. But a lot of people feel that, you know, I have bought and paid for this. And then the content either arrives or doesn't. And there's been a lot of examples of huge games. I remember there was an anime game that was raking in 5 figures a month on Patreon. And then they just canceled and said, yeah, we can't make the product that we want and it's not going to happen. And then they just canceled and closed shop and took all the money and ran. One of the big examples lately of the last few months has been a game called No Man's Sky that we the gamers, you know, fans of space games have been waiting for a long, 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 long time. A lot of people have donated a lot of money, millions of dollars, to get this game off the ground. And it finally arrives, and it's not exactly the game that people were looking for. Now, there's two sides to the coin here. So one, everybody was expecting, the hype had built up so high that people were expecting something that could not be delivered. And no matter what the game was going to be, people were, even before it came out, thinking, oh, it's not going to live up to the hype. Like, didn't you spend $200 on this? Oh, yeah, I can't wait to play it, but it's going to suck.
Well,
so you've automatically resigned yourself to hating whatever product that happens. And the other problem with No Man's Sky is that the developer promised a bunch of features, and like CES demos and E3 demos were showing all of these features. And then to make his deadline, because everyone, it has to come in on a deadline, a lot of those features were cut without telling people. So there was no multiplayer, there was no giant snake, there was, you know, no advanced combat, no AI, etc. And then when the game was released, they're like, oh, it's half done, this is garbage. No, he released the content, they released the content that they wanted to release under the deadlines, you know, that they had. They owed us nothing more. The reviews I found for No Man's Sky were incredibly unfair because they didn't review the game that was. They reviewed the game they thought it was going to be.
Right, yeah. See, the game they wanted.
Right.
See, no, the conundrum with No Man's Sky is a very interesting topic, and it could be a podcast all on its own, because not only is it a bevy of fan entitlement issues, but it's also... it's also a revelation in gaming, and I'll say that because
it's a very different type of game.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Well, also, you got to think that game is infinite.
Well, and I say 15 quintillion worlds. That's not quite infinite, but it's a lot more than we'll ever discover.
You'll never get there in your life.
No.
And the fact of the matter is that people say that there's no multiplayer, but there is, because you can meet other players in that game.
Not yet. Not yet. Not yet. A week after release, there was an article on Kotaku within a week of release that two players had found that they were on the same world. They had found each other through Twitch streams, that, you know, these two players were playing on Twitch and they realized that they were at the same planet. So they found a way to meet, they found a way to get to the same location, and then they tried to interact with each other. And they couldn't. So there was two big theories that came out. It's that, yes, multiplayer exists, but it's just that each individual player, you may be at the same coordinates in space, you may not be at the same coordinates in time. So, but the other theory is that, yeah, well, you know, they had to rush to make the deadline, so they just cut multiplayer out. And that seems a little more believable. Plausible. But, yeah, more plausible, thank you. But either way... You know, I like No Man's Sky. It's a lot of fun. Just do not expect a level of Mass Effect hand-holding. Okay, there is no... Go ahead.
They made a game where you literally... Like, I've never... Like, I've played tons of games. I've watched tons of anime about so much bizarre crap. This game, I literally started it up. I was like, man, I'm going to go run and grab a beer real quick. I'll be right back. I came back. I was sitting there in a crashed ship, and I didn't know what happened. I was like, wait... Huh? What?
What'd I do? All
right.
You know what the best part is? Had you stayed there and not gotten that beer, it would have been the same thing, because the game is so bizarre. There's no opening cutscene, and you just open it and I'm on a how am I here? And that's what they want. There is the story is the story you make for yourself, and it's very much like a game like EVE Online, where, you know, it's an open sandbox in a different context. It's the story of the game is the story you make yourself. So if you expect content to be given to you by the shovel load, you're not going to find it in No Man's Sky. That doesn't make it a bad game. No, it makes it a different game.
What's fascinating to me about all of it is the response before the game was released.
Mm-hmm.
How people were very upset and very angry at this game that they had not played.
Yep.
I love that.
And I want to say that that's because of the culture we live in now, where, like you said, everything's immediate and everything has to be done in all caps. Otherwise, how will you know it's important? And things of that nature. But I don't think that's true, because I think that's the same sort of griping that always happens. That we would always do before something came out. We're waiting for the next book to fall, waiting for the next video game to come. We would just do it to our friends.
Yeah.
And they would be like, yeah, no, I totally agree. Those people are
profanity.
We're not doing it yet.
Oh,
maybe next
gotta
year
edit.
It'll come out.
Pete, that's Peter.
And we got our first swear, and it wasn't mine. Ha ha. Suck it, Jared. You win.
Hey, that's PG-13. That's PG.
No, it's not PG. It's PG, not PG-13. This is for 13-year-olds to be able to listen to.
You know what? You know what? We're gonna have to do a podcast about the MPAA.
Okay.
This is very convenient.
But
Lord have mercy.
Rated for mature audiences.
But I know the listeners, so that's my guide, is my actual listeners.
If you haven't seen the documentary, this film is not yet
rated. It's a great documentary.
Please watch it.
But speaking of fan entitlement, that's the kind of fan entitlement I get on my podcast, is I want to make sure that my 13-year-old can listen to this. And can you make it short enough to fit on a CD? Yes, I've had that request.
You know what? That's great. And you know, it's funny you talk about fan entitlement moments that are actual purposeful and good. Mm-hmm. I actually have to say that a bevy of fan responses reached a certain director whom I hate with all I have inside me.
What, Michael Bay?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Stop explosions?
No. See, what had happened was...
Stop sexism?
The first Ninja Turtles movie he made was god-awful, atrocious, terrible. Don't watch it. You watch it in your favorite childhood dreams of, you know, being a ninja with a bandana, and they're roided out and terrible. And they make a lot of phallus jokes.
It wasn't that bad.
And they made a whole lot of references to their phallus in regards to Megan Fox, and I was kind of me.
Yeah, that was
me. I was awkward. It was awkward for me. Which is saying something.
So how was the second movie?
Most of it is gone.
Oh, good.
Almost like poof. Although
yeah,
there is
a director.
Like there is
an opening. Did you hear Jared?
Yes, I did. There is an opening sequence that Michael Bay put in there, I'm pretty sure, of Megan Fox changing quite dramatically into a schoolgirl uniform that I felt set women back 1,000 years.
But Jason, Michael Bay did not listen to people. He just put another director in because he wants to make more money.
And the other director listens to people.
And not actually work.
No. So, okay, so I have an idea here. Yeah. I want to talk about... So we are not perfect. Like we're going on here like we are the saints upon high. So so let's talk about a moment or something that we feel entitled of as fans. And I'm going to start.
Okay.
And Jason is going to laugh uproariously at this. So this new Ghost in the Shell movie that's coming out.
I don't think that's fan entitlement.
Right,
I think that's being a decent human being.
Right. So they've cast ScarJo as Major Motoko Kusanagi. And instead of finding a perfectly awesome Japanese actress to play this role, they've cast ScarJo because it's the name, it's the face, she's pretty, I get it, don't care. And the fact that I don't even know who director they got, but they wanted to make a super hot chick martial arts movie, and they didn't get Luc Besson to direct. That's his entire shtick. He's done that with everything from Leon the Professional to Fifth Element to everything else in between. Why did you not get Luc Besson to cast a Japanese chick to make this most amazing Ghost in the Shell movie ever? But no, whatever is
Besson
going to...
does his own movies, he doesn't do franchises.
Yeah, exactly. And,
right.
And really,
and I've loved all of them.
Instead of Scarlett Johansson, it would have been Mila Jovovich, and we'd still be upset.
Hey, if Luc Besson directed Mila Jovovich again, she might have made a movie that was worthwhile.
I will say my...
Not a fan of the Resident Evil series?
No.
I do not think that it is fan entitlement to ask for a very Japanese series to have Japanese actors and to not whitewash it. And to everybody who's like, well, she's a robot, she could be anything. That's true. But all of the other Japanese actors are being played by white people too. So that's different. That's social justice.
There's also a lot of people are raving about a really good movie, Kubo and the Two Strings. Mm-hmm. I love that movie. I think it's really, really good. It only has one flaw for me. All the Asian actors in that movie are portrayed by white people.
You mean all the Asian characters?
Yes, all the Asian characters are portrayed by white people. And yes, I know it's voiceover. But when you have a moment where an Asian character steps up and it's George Takei going, oh my. And I go, wait, why is Owen Wilson or Matthew McConaughey playing that little Asian kid?
He was playing the Beetle, not that little Asian kid. But your point stands.
Either way, he's a very large, four-armed Japanese man played by Matthew McConaughey. Are you telling me Beat Takeshi couldn't come in?
See,
he probably can't. He's probably in a real movie.
See, if we're going to talk about
all the things,
if we're going to talk about stuff that I feel entitled to, a lot of times the things that I feel entitled to are things of this nature. Like, you know, if you're going to give me a Gem in the Holograms movie, can it, I don't know, have the original creator involved in it at all? Could
have
it
have something to do with the source material?
Have something to do with the source material? Could any women be on the writing and directing staff? Could it not be a Disney Channel movie that was just rebranded to be Gem and the Holograms? Maybe? Just a little bit?
Dude, it's, you know, you talk about how they did Gem and the Holograms. I have to tip my hat to the new Ninja Turtles, the CGI cartoon, because they've done two crossover anniversary episodes that have been superb. They have gone back and got the original voice actors to play the original turtles that we remember from the cartoon from the late 80s, cool. 90s.
At first, when you're like, the original voice actors, I'm like, they didn't get Shredder.
No.
They got him in. They did not. They were not able to get him because he passed away.
Yeah.
And Uncle Phil, I love you.
Yeah. For those who don't know, the voice of Shredder is Uncle Phil.
But from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. They did get Krang. They did get all the rest of the guys.
Yeah, James Avery.
And they do it right. And in those moments where you're like, my fan entitlement works. That's it, because they give you the new show, which isn't bad. It's pretty good. And then they say, hey, guess what? They went to a time portal. They're back in the days of the 2D animation, and they drew a 2D animation.
Nice. Your fan entitlement worked is, and your fan entitlement is you want the turtles done well. Jared, what is an example of things that you feel entitled to as a fan?
I like to think that I keep my fan entitlement in check a lot of the time.
I think we all like to think that.
I like to think that. So it's hard for me to come up with like something that I feel entitled to as a fan. Some of this, and this is something Ursula Vernon was talking about on Twitter the other day, is that like being someone who writes stories and books and things like that, it's not as magical because I do it, so I know that there's just the same another person doing it on the other side. So I don't feel like, why is this magical thing not happening, you God creature that I'm praying to constantly with my dollars? But it's like someone working really hard. I think when I was younger, I certainly, when I met someone at a convention and got a signature, I was always kind of nonplussed by the interaction, because it's just like, hi, I'm someone whom your work means something to. And they're like, hi, I have no idea who you are or what you stand for.
Yep.
Fan. But I will happily sign your picture and I will smile at you. But like even the really nice interactions are a little hollow because you are a stranger to them. And again, being a content creator, even that's a weird thing to say. Look, why don't I just say I'm a writer? Being a writer and a podcaster and meeting people who are now on the other side and who are enjoying my work, but I have no idea who they are. I can see where that sort of hollowness and awkwardness comes from. So I'm a little more forgiving now of those stuff that happened when I was younger. I think the closest thing is that I've always been saying for years that Will Arnett should be Batman. And now that that's happening,
yes,
vindicated.
Yeah.
Lego Batman, but he's still Batman.
I mean, he's still Batman. And he's great. He's a great Batman. No one can argue with that.
No.
And I have had so many looks of disbelief for years. And it's like, no, you don't understand.
Jared is vindicated.
So, as a writer and content creator, Jared, have you had any run-ins with entitled fans?
There was one, and it was so weird that it's hard for me to even say that's just like fan entitlement. It was just a lot of things going on with that particular person, and part of it was that they were local, and so I think I don't know if it was a fan entitlement in that they felt they deserved more of my time because they were also fans of me and also local, or if it was just something that they're just have issues that need to be addressed because I've heard about other people interacting with this person. And I don't think them being a fan of me had any connection to that. I don't want to go into it too deeply because this is a real person and not an abstract concept like we've been talking about. So, I mean, I have had people approach me when I'm doing things and ask me to sign things. And actually, I don't mind that because I don't like having times when I sign things. Like, I have been asked at conventions, like, do you want a signing period? And I'm like, no, I do not want to sit at a table and stare blankly into space while no one comes up.
I
don't want to do that.
I mean, think that would terrify me.
Like, it could not happen that way. It could be I have that and a bunch of people come by. I'm not that quite egocentric enough to believe that will happen, but that's a possibility. I would much rather people just come up to me and be like, hey, would you sign my book? And that's great for me. But again, I'm not being paid by a convention to be there and to have a specific signing period. So things are different in that way.
After taking into consideration that you wrote the rhymes for the Galactic Rap Battle, I feel you can make lead into gold, whatever you do.
Yeah, if you can make Jason presentable, then, you know. Yeah.
Exactly. Mind you, he did that by putting a mask on my face.
That does help.
That is required.
Great in that mask, though. I just wanted to say.
Yes.
I love it. I still have it. I wear it on occasion. I'll sit there like, I gotta get ready.
He's wearing it now.
With you in mind, but when you put it on, I was like, oh, make that look good.
You know what? I have it. I could have Jen bring it next time she comes up with it. But, you know, I feel so bad, and it's feeding into my imposter syndrome because, like, one of the persons who influenced me greatly when it comes to my fledgling attempts at writing and podcasting was Mer Lafferty. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Mer Lafferty constantly talks about and constantly brings up is hurling with imposter syndrome. You guys talk about how you've met people and when you were younger or whatever, and you felt like the interaction with them wasn't what you wanted. I've never had that. And I say that because I was able to do press at surprisingly for the last 2 years, I've not paid to go to a convention. And that's what kicked off this imposter syndrome was I was like, as Nutty would know, I've met Richard Epcar. And he's as genuine and as awesome as you would think.
And he loves me.
He does. He even has audio commentary to justify and support that statement.
There's some really great people out there. Like, LeVar Burton is just as warm and as friendly and as caring as you want him to be. When you,
I met him
there.
In a hot dog. I met him in a hot dog line at Dragon Con.
That's
and
awesome.
He was cool as heck.
Yeah, he's great.
He's just like I shrugged off my hand. Like, it was the most awesome moment. Just like Felicia Day. Met Felicia Day on a street corner in Atlanta for Dragon Con. And she's as cool as you would think. She's as smooth as the other side of the pillow.
Yeah, I think most people that do the convention circuit, it's you either get into it or you're extremely awkward and you can't do it anymore. I mean, there's some people that push themselves to do it and they really shouldn't. There's a certain Power Ranger I've heard of. You know, then you've got like the convention pros, like Denise Crosby. It will make you feel so welcome, except when she's grabbing and shaking tech like crazy. But it was still an enjoyable experience. And that's fantastic. And, your mic isn't on. There you go.
Yeah, I got beat up by Tasha Yar. That's pretty.
You were really beat up. She was just kind of shaking you because she was excited by your costume.
Were you the Clockwork Doc at that point?
I was.
His very first time.
It was the very first day
doc.
Of the very first con as the Clockwork Doctor. I had my head down because I was trying to. I had a different set of pants then. They were much bigger and they kept going over my boots. So I was being very, very careful going down.
And your lenses were fogging.
Right, my lenses were fogging because I had no venting and I was trying to go down a half flight of stairs. And all I hear is, oh my God, that's awesome. And someone grabs me and I start being shook. And I look up and who is this pretty blonde woman? And why is she? And
so
she's just
Tasha Yar.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she just
Tasha Yar fangirled.
Yeah, and she starts shaking me. She goes, this is the most amazing costume I've ever seen. This is so cool. And then I'm like, who is this woman? Oh my God, it's Tasha Yar. And the only thing I could do was like give a thumbs up and like, and she goes away. And it was like 3 seconds of being beaten up by the security, the original security officer of the USS Enterprise.
That's how it's supposed to be done, right?
Yeah.
And her handlers were all just standing there like, we were trying to get her through the crowd, but I don't know what to do now.
You know, I love how everyone loves your Clockwork Doc, and he represents death.
Yeah. Well, there was a. I did have a weird meeting with a fan once. It was at Balticon at the old hotel, where it was a group of young girls. I don't think they were over 14 or 15 years old, but they were dressed as, I don't know, characters from some pirate anime. The one girl was brandishing a frying pan as a weapon. And they come up to me, they see me, she's hiding behind the frying pan because she's playing that she's afraid of the doc, and the doc just kind of stands there and looks at her. And she comes up to me, and with these gargantuan blue eyes, looks at me straight through the mask and goes, "You're the angel of death." And I kind of bow slightly, you know, trying to play in character, and she drops to her knees and starts venerating me. And I'm now stuck with the realization that I am not the Clockwork Doctor. I am a dude in a costume in a hotel hallway with a 14-year-old girl on his knees at his feet. And I break character immediately. I'm like, "You got to stand up. Like, stand up. Stop doing that. Stop doing that." She, "Well, you're the angel of death." "Yes. And do you want a photo?" "I'd love a photo." "Then let's take a photo and stop this before it gets weird."
So getting back to fan entitlement, there's a couple of things that I do want to talk about. Like, for instance, so many people were upset about the ending of Mass Effect that they actually did rewrites. Tech?
Well, I don't know. Everybody wants the red, white, and blue flag waving, yay America, you know, the good guys win sort of ending to a game. And when it doesn't end the way you want and it ends with, spoilers, the death of a main character, and ends the trilogy, a lot of people are like, "Yeah, but I did, you know, 140 hours to die. That doesn't sound like the good ending." It was a fabulous... I didn't mind the original three endings. I played through all three.
It was beautiful.
And then when they rewrote them, I played through the next four. All seven endings aren't bad. There was nothing wrong with the original three in my mind that needed a rewrite. But it was just people were so mad that they died that they actually forced the content creators to rewrite their own opus.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating thing because you're so personally involved in a video game.
Yeah.
Even on games that are like essentially, you know, rail things where you're just moving toward a storyline that you have no actual control over, but you are interacting with it.
It is like a very long movie.
Yeah, but people are still very invested because like that character in there who is the lead, who I am controlling, that's me. And so when the ending happens that they don't like, it's not that it's like, that movie had a kind of a bummer ending. It's like, why could you do this to me? And there's that weird disconnect that I think is I want to say unique to video games. I haven't done enough study in that kind of world to know, but it's very fascinating that there's that personal feeling because you are theoretically the one driving the action. And if the action does not go the way that you want it to, it's much more personal than in a book or a movie where you're aware that other people are doing.
Yeah, and I think that there's a very famous example of it for a movie, but we were able to move past it. And I think it was a lot less intense, or at least it felt that way to me. And, you know, South Park even did an episode about it, and it was Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. And the line, this is a shocking line, and I once you say this, to me that's almost as bad as God winning something, but it raped my childhood. No, it didn't. Right. It didn't change any of the other Indiana Jones movies. He didn't go back and replace, you know, the Ark of the Covenant with a walkie-talkie, okay? He did nothing to your childhood. You still watched that as a kid, and it still shaped your development.
But you know what that phrase means? I think people are hitting on it without realizing what exactly it means.
And it's truer than... Shots fired. Shots truer... fired to Steven Spielberg.
Yes. Go ahead, Jared.
It's truer than I think a lot of people are saying. Because when someone says something raped their childhood, what they're saying is, I'm an adult now. The things of my childhood are things that are in my childhood. Like, I can't get at them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted this new thing to make me feel the way my childhood did, and it doesn't. And now I'm starting to question why I liked those things to begin with, and if I still do. And now my childhood is farther away. It is damaged. It is different now because of what you've done. And not damaged, just different. I think that's more accurate.
I can accept that explanation.
Right, but that's not what they mean. That's not what they think, but that's what they mean.
Yeah, yeah.
That when they come across this thing, because we have this... I've been trying to steer away from blaming the culture on everything, but I think there is a strong force in our American culture to keep everyone in kind of this perpetual adolescence, to keep playing with toys because that's where money is. And I think there's a strong force moving us toward being like, this stuff is eternal. And it's not, because you change and grow. And so when people say, this raped my childhood, or this is not my thing, this didn't make me feel the same way as that childhood stuff does, it's forcing them to confront that they are now different people than they were when they were children. And that's hard for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That sort of change is hard to get behind. And I think that's similar to the insanity that propped up with the Ghostbusters remake, which was just insane. People were insane about that because they had to admit that they weren't kids anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really bothersome.
Yeah.
And that really wounded them for some reason, that who they were as children is different than who they are now. And so they were trying so hard to take down any evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
And if that evidence is a Ghostbusters film that's not made for them, then that needs to be destroyed.
There's a great meme out there about this, and I absolutely love it. And it shows this, like, you know, middle-aged guy dressed as a Ghostbuster, and it's like, the new Ghostbusters movie is not meant for you. You already have two Ghostbusters movies and a cartoon. And then it shows a picture of a young girl in a Ghostbusters cosplay, and it says, the new Ghostbusters movie is for her.
Right.
It's not for you. You already had this. This is for her. And I loved the new Ghostbusters movie.
It was so I haven't watched it yet. I'll be honest. That's my disclaimer. But, you know, it's unfair the way that movie's been treated just because, mm-hmm. you know, they chose to, you know, have a cast of all women actors, or they chose a different direction with this and that. But even, like, very famous content creators and guys that, you know, I've followed for a long time, like the Angry Video Game Nerd, who refuses to watch the new movie, slams it, and has an entire rant about how he will not watch it because what he wants to watch is Ghostbusters 3 with what's left of the original cast, and because he can't get it and they're doing a remake instead, he's not watching it. Hate sexism. And very annoying and very frustrating that, you know, we can't get over our nostalgia glasses and we can't we can't move on and move forward with things merely because it's different than what I expected.
And if they did that, he'd hate on it anyway because he'd say it sucks. Why did you even bother doing this without everybody? You know, I mean, that's the thing that kills me.
Yeah, you know, Ghostbusters 2 wasn't very good. Can we all just agree on that?
Okay.
And Ghostbusters 1, while fun, if you think about it for any period of time, is really creepy in the wrong ways.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I liked Ghostbusters 2.
Peter Venkman is kind of rapey.
Oh, he's totally rapey. If you ever want to protect your childhood, right, and you think that your childhood memories are perfect, don't try introducing your favorite movies as a kid to somebody who hasn't seen them. I've done this.
An adult, yeah.
Apparently, according to an adult audience, Legend is horrible.
Oh my God, what a horrible movie.
Okay, we've heard your rant before.
Tom Cruise in tights for 2 hours. I don't need this in my life ever.
And the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is horrible, horrible and sexist. Oh. And it is, but I never saw it that way.
Horribly. It's like... it feels like something from the era it's pretending to be a part
yeah.
of. It
yeah. Oh, and you know, having never watched it as a kid and never having the nostalgia glasses to look through it, to the Dr. Jones round eye jokes, the weirdly, oddly Polynesian culture that is somehow in India, and yeah. the crazy volcanoes and the, you know, the voodoo dancing, and just, it is horribly racist, sexist, racist again, racist some more. And why do people like this movie?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, so if you thought, oh, it was good, it doesn't mean, your nostalgia glasses does not mean that it would be a good movie if you saw it today for the first time. And that is something to remember.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. We can hear you.
Okay.
So to pile on to this topic and to throw on a little bit more, there is a bit that I have an issue with, and that is when somebody makes an adaptation and people get upset that it's different. And they're like, that's not what the comic book says. That's not what the comic book says. Well, if you won't like what the comic book says so much, read the comic book, and that's fine.
My re-entrance.
Adaptation.
My re-entrance is grand.
Okay.
So, really quick, you were talking about the anticipation of with the video game Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
There's a film parallel, except it was done in such a way that the ending ruined it, and that would be called
Gone with the Wind.
I love making fun of that movie, but no. I'm talking about The Gray with Liam Neeson. That movie starts out as a drama and a survival battle along the lines of Alive. But then you boil it down to the spoilers. Liam Neeson's got he's about to bare knuckle brawl a wolf, a pack of wolves, in fact. And
that's
we don't
not
get
really
to
a
see.
Spoiler. That's in the trailer.
Yeah, but we get to see that point, and then it cuts off, and we've been built up to the point of, like, we're waiting for Liam Neeson to punch a wolf.
Well, who doesn't want to see that? I mean, really.
He does have a very peculiar set of skills.
But they don't give it to you, and your anticipation, your excitement, the thing you wanted all, you waited an hour and a half to see Liam Neeson beat the crap out of some wolves and walk out of the Alaskan tundra, and it doesn't happen.
Well, and that reminds me of, like, people getting upset about Suicide Squad because the trailers portrayed it as a Joker movie. It's Suicide Squad. It's not about the Joker.
There's actually a class action lawsuit from people who felt that they deserved their money back because the trailers, and they actually went and calculated the percentage of scenes of Joker in the trailer to the percentage of scenes of Joker in the movie, and then said because it was less than the trailer portrayed, we were falsely advertised, I want my money back.
Oh, have they never seen a trailer for a movie before ever?
Apparently not.
Aliens who have come to America and they were like, oh, our first foray in American culture is this Suicide Squad movie. Look at this trailer.
Jared, you're hitting on all cylinders with me right now because Nettie keeps bringing up things that are literally on my list of topics. People hated that movie because Jared Leto
I think we get the gist. Where they're hating on the movie because there's not so much Jared Leto, or because Jared Leto is the wrong Joker for them.
Yes, yes. Even though there's a wonderful movie in there where a character.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
There is a fun movie.
There's
enjoyed it.
There's certainly a movie in there. We can say yeah, that. There's a fun movie in there.
There's a fun movie in there where a character who is grossly and grotesquely disfigured has the wonderful line of, not me, honey, I'm beautiful. And it is so affirming and so great.
That is a great line. And Harley backs him up and she goes, that's right, you're beautiful. And to me, in my headcanon, she means inside and out because she used to be his doctor too.
Exactly.
So we're running out of time here. I want to wrap things up. So just quick, rapid fire thing. Anything that you wanted to mention that you didn't get a chance to mention today?
If you thought the fan hate for No Man's Sky was bad, just wait till Star Citizen comes out and you see how bad they hate on the creator of Wing Commander because the nostalgia glasses no longer fit. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. Might not be what we expect, but man, No Man's Sky was just a teaser for what's about to happen to Star Citizen.
Okay. Jason?
My thing is... It was Mass Effect. But basically, when it comes to the whole general fan, I think they just that fans need to find a way to separate themselves not only from the content but also from the effort they put into the content. Like the creators recognize your effort and they see it. They can't necessarily act upon it or verbally or physically or overtly recognize it and say, hey, man, those guys are awesome. But they know it and they see it. I mean, even monoliths of writing like Stephen King recognize the effort and the time that his fans put into their work. So just calm down, guys. Just calm down. Just calm down. I mean, stuff's changing, man. Jessica Jones is one of the greatest things put to television I've seen because it has an interracial relationship that is depicted in reality.
Awesome. Jared.
Stuff's changing.
I think I had something to say, and then the Jennifer Jones thing just made me lose it.
How hot is Jennifer Jones while we're on this topic?
No, Jessica. It's great. I'm with you 100%. I'm cheering you on. That's what... Like,
almost yes! As hot as Luke Cage.
Yeah, he is pretty hot, I gotta say.
So hot.
Oh, my God. By the way,
such a beautiful man.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Luke Cage, I totally did an interview with a stunt guy who worked on that show at my last convention. I haven't put that out yet.
So go to talknerdytomepodcast.com to get that in your feed.
Okay, I stopped being lazy and a farm boy.
What I think is important to remember is that the relationship that we have with culture, fan relationship, now is not something that used to be the case. And it's not because of the internet. It's because a lot of the things that we enjoy as fans are corporately owned and that there are rules about what you can and cannot do with them. Mm-hmm. And that separates people from the process. I think once upon a time, the sort of fan culture like fan fiction, fan art, fan music was just a part of culture. There's a whole lot. I mean, that's all folk music is.
Yep.
Is people redoing other people's stuff. That's what folk art is. A while back, I went on a tear and said, I'm not calling it fan fiction anymore. It's all folk literature.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice. But then no one knew what I was talking about, so I've stopped doing that. But I really should get back to it.
Oh, it's a valid point.
You should. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so I think, and we have this now separation between who people are as content creators. Why do I keep saying it? I hate that phrase and I keep saying it. Who people are as creators and who people are as fans. And there really shouldn't be a difference because that's not the way art's supposed to work. Mm-hmm. Art is supposed to work as a communication. And your reaction to my art is not more or less valid than the art originally was. It's just that the art is originally there. And that art is most likely a reaction to another piece of art that I experience that you don't know, because that's how art works, is that we are all influenced and then we're forced to create by either something that's beautiful and amazing and inspires us or something that's horrible and we're like, I can do this better. That's just how art is supposed to be and how art was. And only in these last, let's say a couple centuries, have we as humans been like, no, this art is this thing, it is immutable, and this art is this thing, and it is dumb. And those never the twain shall meet. And so what we have then is people who want to interact with the art, who want to have a voice, who want to be there, and they don't know how because corporate lawyers are shutting down their fan films or whatever. And they feel like the only way they can interact with the art is to scream on the internet, to have class action lawsuits, to do all this stuff. And I think we've set up this relationship through our culture with our culture that isn't healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could go back to something that was a little more, not interactive necessarily, but people did not feel so ashamed of.
Cooperative?
Not cooperative, but just there seems to be this huge gap between art with a capital A and art with a capital and art with a lowercase A.
Yeah, like
fan art versus the real stuff.
Yeah.
And then like, somehow one is more or less valid than the other because one is protected by a corporate trademark.
Yeah.
And I think that that's not healthy.
Well, and I will definitely get into this more when I do an episode about fan fiction, which I've been planning for the last 5 years. one of the things that always got me is, well, what's the difference between fan fiction and pastiche? And right. The only difference is pastiche has permission, maybe, or that somebody has decided to legitimize it. I mean, I am in the middle of reading Dodger by Terry Pratchett. That is fan fiction. He is using Charles Dickens characters and Charles Dickens himself as a character and leaning on Oliver Twist. Why is that not put down the way that, you know, general fan fiction is?
Because George Lucas blended the lines. When he allowed people to write in his universe and he didn't smack them with the band hammer, he blended those lines.
Yeah, so think about his universe for a second, okay? He tried to make a Flash Gordon remake and couldn't get the rights.
Yeah.
So he made Star Wars, but just filing off these serial numbers.
Exactly. So the thing that I want to mention is, when you are hating on these creators or the people behind stuff that you get really mad, do not forget all of the good that they gave you when they tick you off. Fozzie has reminded me of this. Trekkies will remember a lot of hate for Rick Berman and Brendan Braga. And let's not forget that they did a lot of good for Trek, not just the few things that you are upset about. And my big thing is, Deep Space Nine would not have happened without Rick Berman. So you can't say that he killed Trek, because he brought us one of the best franchises.
No, JJ killed Trek. We all know that.
Yeah, well, that's
red matter, my left cheek.
And that's your fan entitlement, because you want Star Trek to be Star Trek.
Man. They were good science fiction movies. I enjoyed munching on the popcorn at the theater with those two JJ movies and that last one there. But they're not Trek. They're close, but they're not Trek.
I think the last one is the closest to Trek, though. But all right. So thank you very much for joining us. Jared, where can people find you on the internet?
JaredAxelrod.com is the hub where everything connects outly, but the podcast, The Voice of Free Planet X, is at planetx.libsyn.com, and of course there's my Twitter at planetx, and there's emails and Facebooks and all that other
and a
stuff.
Patreon really the, and all of
and
that
Patreon.
Stuff
but really the important thing is the podcast, planetx.libsyn.com. There's a great episode up there right now that's the about to be shunted away as I put up a new episode, but the one that's on the feed now is the live episode we did at the Philadelphia Podcast Festival, and it was so much fun and so wonderful.
That was good.
And yeah, lamentive, I really love that.
Lament of, was it?
Somebody's
Wake of the Lacuna.
Yeah, Wake of the Lacuna. And I was listening to it, and I'm like, oh man, this actor, he's so good. He's so good. He seems so familiar. Oh, he's from the Black Tribbles. That's why he's familiar.
Yeah, Len's amazing.
He was like, he had this whole like monologue, and I was just completely blown away. That was really good. So
See, what Jared doesn't say is that he's absolutely amazing, and we'll have to say it for him.
Jason, get off his phallus.
I can't. He's so adorable.
It's an adorable phallus.
You can find me trying to adult in this podcasting world at thetalknerdytomepodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdytome. And, of course, you can find me on the Twitter, controlling most of the social media, at Nerdy to Me Podcast. Only thing I've got coming out anytime soon is I've been debating on putting out my Aaron Dismuke episode. It's an interview with the guy who did the voice of Alphonse Elric from the smash star crushing anime series Full Metal Alchemist.
Why are you debating? Just do it.
Hey, Jason, what have you got coming up in October?
Oh, yes. What do you have coming up in October?
Oh, man. You're going to make Jen murder me in my sleep. Coming up in October for the fourth year.
Yeah, yeah.
We will have the Halloween Horror Fest, which is 31 days and 31 podcasts. We watch a horror movie a day and we podcast about it. Jen hates me because this has made her watch so much of my addiction that it is not fun. My addiction of bad horror movies. I even bought a 5-movie pack from Walmart. Man, you can find some treasure in the bottom of a Walmart movie bin. and I just bought one the other day, so things might change on that list. But basically, I post a list on our Facebook page and on my personal Facebook page about what we're going to be watching. And basically, we Nutty thinks I'm crazy. She said this multiple times because we do 31 podcasts and they're full length. They're not.
Yeah, they're not like, you know, 10-minute Dog Days of Podcasting podcasts. They're a full hour to 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours on, you know, Frighteners.
Yeah.
If
they get a drunken tech to talk about how much he loves Reba McEntire and Tremors, because, wow, that rant went awesome, but that was a lot of rye.
Only time I've crossed 3 hours has been with my man James. Okay. He's not been on for a Horror Fest. So no 3 hour podcast for the Horror Fest, but we have cracked 2 hours easily. But that's happening. And if you want to get an example of what that would be like, we did do an episode about Don't Breathe, a horror slasher drama thriller that came out starring Stephen Lang, who is amazing in that film. You can look back to the archives and find 10 Cloverfield Lane, which was another one we talked about with John Goodman being amazing in it. So yeah. That stuff. And one day I may be as good as Jared Axelrod and be able to make it so that you can go to one website and find all my stuff. But it's hard.
It's not hard, man. It's not hard. It's really not hard.
Look, there are pigs outside right now saying I need to feed them.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. You'll get all the links in the outro. Thank you everyone for joining me. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Tech. And we'll be talking to you guys later. Bye.
You don't have to thank Tech. He's there all the time.
Yeah.
Shut up, Jason.
You know I love you, Tech.
Yeah, I love you too, buddy. Something I wanted to mention.
Okay.
You were talking about how Star Wars was just Flash Gordon with the serial numbers ripped off. Remember that Mass Effect is Star Wars with the serial numbers ripped off.
This is
because
true.
They lost the rights to the franchise and they just...
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was supposed to be KOTOR.
Yeah. So Mass Effect was supposed to be Knights of the Old Republic 3.
Now I really...
If you think about the Asari are just really Twi'leks and that, you know, Paragon and Renegade are just the light side and dark side of the Force, it was supposed to be a Star Wars game. And then they filed the serial numbers off, changed the ship, but they already had like 90% of the voice acting recorded. They had a lot of the cutscenes already done. They just changed the window dressing and made this entire new universe, which was amazing because it stood on its own. Now they've got a trilogy, they got Andromeda coming out next year.
They got a movie. They got a movie too.
That's supposed to be KOTOR 3.
Yeah. And we didn't even talk about, you know, like the what caused the whole Paramount's rules of acquisition or anything. But again, we'll get into that in a fan fiction episode. And Tech, anything you want to plug?
No, I am. Hi, I'm Tech. I write about guns and sci-fi stuff and nerd stuff whenever the will strikes me. You can find me at nimlast.org and the rest of the same info that Nutty's going to put at the end of the show. You can find me on Twitter at @theclockdocs, words separated by underscores. So if you want me to answer some questions, send me a Twitter, send me a thing on the website, send me a thing on Facebook, and we'll talk nerd and gun stuff.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
Yes. Yes. This will work perfectly. We'll add a little audio here. We'll watch a movie here. We'll record here. Yes! It's alive! Alive!
No, it's not alive. It's just the Horror Fest.
But it's...
No, it's just the podcast Horror Fest at TalkNerdyToMePodcast.com.
But it is horrifying and spooky.
Well, yeah, 31 days of podcast is horrifying, but the movies are definitely up for debate, which they can do at facebook.com/nerdytome.
But, and we can...
No. No. End the promo. Nope, you're done.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlast Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlast.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.